Every year on the fourth Sunday of Easter, we get the same familiar passage from the Gospel of John about Jesus being the Good Shepherd. It's peculiar to John, that is, none of the other Gospels have that image, although it's very deep in Jewish tradition. The 23rd Psalm, of course, the Lord is my shepherd, is probably the most famous instance of that. But every year it comes up, and I get the opportunity to remind myself and you that this is not a particularly good translation of the Greek text to call Jesus the Good Shepherd. The Greek word is not good. They had a word for good, but the word that they used was the beautiful shepherd. I am the beautiful shepherd. The adjective is kalos, as in calligraphy. And I am the beautiful shepherd. And I think it makes a very large difference as to how you translate that word. I mean, even Raymond Brown, a kind of premier John scholar when he was alive, waffles, it seems to me, by translating, I am the model shepherd. Well, model still doesn't touch good, or beautiful, I don't think. And why it's so important is that that's consonant with the whole rest of the Gospel of John, wherein Jesus is depicted above all as the light of the world. Okay? How does light work? Light works just by being there, just by being the light, period. And the only way you can keep from seeing things in the light is to consciously choose not to see in the light, which is why you have all this ferocious language in John about those refusing to acknowledge that Jesus is God's messenger, etc., etc. They're damned already. Why? Because they have made a choice in John's reading of things for a lie rather than the truth. And that's important because beauty works exactly the same way. Beauty's just there. I mean, you can have 400 experts saying, yeah, isn't that beautiful? That's really beautiful. It's beautiful for the following reason, blah, blah, blah. Structure, form, and this part of the tradition is exemplified there, blah, 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 blah. But that doesn't do it. A thing hits us with its own beauty or it doesn't. And beauty is absolutely non-coercive. Absolutely non-coercive. There's one line in all the documents of Vatican II which expresses this very well when it talks about the truth cannot be imposed. The truth simply is there as the truth, and people see it or they choose not to see it. I mean, the truth. And the question, the case of the truth, is a little more complicated, obviously, than in beauty or the light. But that's extraordinarily important, it seems to me, in trying to figure out the Christian life. Why would anybody be a Christian? I mean, I was baptized as a baby and had no choice in the matter. I thonked through seven not particularly happy years in Catholic school with some nuns who are not very happy human beings and expressed their unhappiness in a marvelous variety of ways. And I have very few recollections, frankly. Maybe my experience is different. I'm sure it is, to some extent, from everybody else's. If somebody were to say, well, Trojak, why are you there? And I would not say, I have been seduced by the beauty of this organization and its members and, above all, the bosses and the way they operate. And yet this is clearly This is clearly what's intended here. But beauty is messy. Beauty is unmanageable. Beauty is intractable. Beauty is very hard to organize and measure and line up in little rows, little neat rows that you can count. Right? Which is, I suppose, why all of us, parents, teachers, bishops, anybody in authority, wants to rely on much more easily accessible criteria for whether you're doing the job or not. You know? Grade time. My email's filled with, I've got to get into education school. I've got to take my LSATs. What did I get on my, you know, final exam, blah, blah, blah. And everybody has to go through that. And we all know the game, you know. It's played without maybe our recognizing what's going on, but it's played by everybody and unquestioningly, I think. We're even in this beauty business. You're in something perilously like a wilderness. Where all the normal coordinates of life and certainty simply don't work anymore. Beauty works in a qualitatively different way than anything else. And so, as I mentioned at Sky's funeral, one of the most extraordinary things in Christian history is the great Jonathan Edwards, who's usually known because in high school you had to read his famous sermon, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. You know, here's this great Calvinist preacher, you know, fulminating and scaring the bejesus out of it, all of his hearers, you know. But Edwards said that, first of all, God was a supremely beautiful. That was his central notion, just like Augustine did that kind of thing too. There's an allure. God is alluring. But as I said, to go back, this is a kind of intractable way of operating, and it, this wilderness business is expressed both in the first letter from John, which is probably written by somebody else, much later than the Gospel, and the Gospel. But this whole business of being known. You know, I know mine. I know mine, and mine know me. And we have this echoed in the thing. The world does not know us. It did not know him, and we don't know who we are. We are God's children now. What we shall be has not been revealed. We do not know. We do know that when it is, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. That's something extraordinarily profound, I think, and says something hugely important about human life in all kinds of dimensions. I just want to look at one. Namely, this business of really knowing who we are, our identity. It's very dangerous in our world, or maybe everybody's world, not to be certain of who you are. You know? To be uncertain about who you are is to expose a weak flank, and somebody can intervene and do bad things to you because you don't have that wonderful, solid carapace of self-knowledge and certainty holding it together. And we can look at our titles, our bank accounts, or all this other stuff, that all the coordinates that tell us who we are, you know, and find safety and security in that. But it is really scary not to know who you are. And I'm not talking about absolute ignorance. To live that way. To live knowing that we don't know who we are, I think is the very beginning of what it is to be a Christian. It is this kind of disabling, disorienting, dislocating thing that happens when we run into beauty. Let me spell that out just a little bit. When we run into beauty, why are we so struck by it? Because it's such a bloody anomaly in the world. The world understood in any variety, oh, we got tulips in the front yard, and that's beautiful, and that's very nice. But when you look at the world as such, and the pattern of our human relations, probably one of the last words you use to describe that is that this is really beautiful. This is really beautiful. And when we run into beauty, we are kind of undone. It sort of sweeps us away. Sweeps us to some place where we do not normally live. And I believe that see Jesus as beautiful can do exactly the same thing to our sense of who we are. To be able to live in that kind of wilderness, that kind of uncertainty, that kind of unfinishedness, if you will. There's maybe a better way of talking about it. So to be unfinished is also to be in the wilderness. Eh? But that's the very heart of the matter. Seems to me. However different that is, and it is massively different from my normal day-by-day experience. Phone rings, I get mail, I go to King's College, I come here, I go to Price Chopper, Value City, and I know everything is in place, you know, blah, 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 blah. Everything is certain. And I'm sure of all my moves. Huh? And it's extraordinarily easy as well as tempting to just extend the illusion of having all those certainties into the deepest part of my life, that, well, I really know who I am. I really do know what I'm all about. But this, the problem, the fundamental religious problem with that, of course, is that if I am so, that lovely French phrase, plein de soi, if I am so full of my self-knowledge, then there's no room for God. There really isn't. So that again, in the Buber's wonderful phrase, that holy insecurity, holy, H-O-L-Y, holy insecurity, that sweet unassurance, you know, that I am Jesus, you know, is at the very heart of the matter, and what we must, I believe, at least I have to struggle to maintain in the face of a world which demands all kinds of nicely trimmed corners and clear outlines, and above all, certainties about myself.